From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. NPR's special coverage of the impeachment trial of President Trump continues today after Insight. It will continue for the duration of the process. Jack Oman is covering the impeachment in a way that maybe 40 or 50 people in our country do, and that's by political cartoon. He has drawn Nancy Pelosi as Little Bo Peep, Mitch McConnell as a sort of Grim Reaper hitman type of character. A cartoon from Sunday features Devin Nunes and Adam Schiff as Goofus and Gallant from the Kids Highlights magazine. So Jack's career goes back to his college days and the 1980s at the University of Minnesota. He spent some decades at the Oregonian and has been at the Sacramento Bee since 2012. He was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 2012 and won the Pulitzer in 2016. He's won every other major award in cartooning, too. He's the author of 10 books. And actually, he had to draw himself in a cartoon that was published Monday because he has a new job. Hello, Jack.
Good morning. How are you?
Glad to have you here. I love reciting all that you've done, not to mention publishing your first national cartoon at age 19, because as I said, I think the world of cartooning is small and the people who have done a lot in it is just a sliver of that.
We are down to probably 25 full-time editorial cartoonists on staff on daily newspapers now. And when I started in 1980 or so, there were probably about 225. So that's where we are now.
What's happening?
Well, I think a lot of things have happened. Just the general downsizing of daily newspapers, number one. And number two, I think that there's been, you know, some aversion to that kind of commentary as newspapers have kind of blanded out to a certain extent. So I think that that's hurt a lot of cartoonists. And I think if you looked at the list now, virtually all the surviving cartoonists have won Pulitzers.
And yet the interest and engagement in politics is, you could argue, higher in some ways than ever before in this Trump presidency.
Well, it sure is. And that's the point that cartoonists keep making. And I had been president of the Association of American Editorial Cartoonists a couple of years ago. And so we keep saying there's such high interest in this. You look at Twitter, you look at Facebook, you look at social. Everybody's doing memes, cartoons, you know, people posting them. And you know, thank God the Sacramento Bee and McClatchy have kept their cartoonists, generally speaking. And I think that, you know, they've got a strong commitment to that. And, you know, bringing me down here in 2012 was probably not going right with the tide at the time. So I'm really grateful to them.
Is the firing of Rob Rogers at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette in 2018 an example of what you're talking about? He had been an editorial cartoonist since 1993 there. There was some discussion of the politics of the paper changing. What happened?
I think that it was a perfect storm of things, but what happened was is that they had been owned by the Block family, and their publisher, John Block, had really gotten in tight with Trump. And so he was letting, you know, they let Rob do what he wanted to do for years and years and years. And Rob and I actually came into cartooning at virtually the same time. And so, you know, there are pictures of his publisher with Trump and so on. And so he became more and more obsessed with Trump and not criticizing Trump. And so I'm not precisely sure what the politics of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette were, but I think that it was probably a moderate liberal newspaper. And then John Block really dropped the hammer, and so they got rid of Rob. And Rob, you know, when you start engaging in a public war with your employer, it's really bad, and so he didn't win the war.
Hmm. So of the 25, that's the number that you said, what's the makeup, besides Pulitzer Prize winners, of who's cartooning at that upper level across the country?
People who are 60 years old plus, mostly white male. Interestingly, my very good friend Darren Bell, who lives in Sacramento, won the Pulitzer in 2019. He's the first African American to win the Pulitzer Prize in this category. But generally, you have two women who won the Pulitzer Prize who at all in editorial cartooning, and there's Ann Telness and Signe Wilkinson, and they're still active. But generally speaking, it's older and more male.
When you won the Pulitzer, you told me that was like hitting the Powerball in journalism. We also talked about the fact that you become branded when you win it. Just look at how many times we've mentioned it in a few minutes of conversation.
Fine by me.
What difference has it made? How has it changed your world, your life, your identity?
Well, in a way, it you do become branded, and the joke is now you know what your obituary is going to read. I didn't realize how far away I was from the Pulitzer Prize until I actually won the Pulitzer Prize. And so you have to go through the jury, which is five people, and then it goes up to the, and they recommend three people. And then the board, which is, I don't know how many people are on the board, 13 or something like that, then they pick you out of the three. And so it really is, and then you're coming out of a pool of entrance of about 100 people. I mean, there are a lot of freelance cartoonists and people who are doing all sorts of interesting work who are not working on daily newspapers. But so you kind of look at those numbers. I had entered 30 some odd times before I was a finalist in 2012. Hmm. And I was in shock when I was a finalist then, and I was really in shock when I won. There have only been 73 people who have won the Pulitzer Prize in this category over 102 years. Not that I memorized it, but it's a small number of people.
We will link the past conversations you and I have had from 2012 when you came to Sacramento and 2016 when you won to our website. Let's talk about cartooning during this impeachment process. And how much of all of this are you watching, following, reading about?
Well, I'm watching it constantly and reading about it constantly. I would have to say that this has kind of turned into an OJ trial. And we're lacking now is a white Bronco chase in this story. We have Alan Dershowitz. It's gotten so weird. And Trump's defense team, if I may speak bluntly, is weird. I mean, the lawyers that he's chosen to represent him are just kind of Fox News rejects. And I mean, would you hire Alan Dershowitz to represent you in this environment after he's represented Jeffrey Epstein and OJ? And I mean, it's become a complete clown show. And they address non-relevant arguments. It's turned into a weird reality television show like the rest of the country. And they don't address the impeachable points. And quite frankly, I'm amazed that they didn't impeach the president for emoluments, because that's easily provable.
That was the first discussion way back in 2016 of where this kind of a process might go, was under emollients.
Well, when you look at President Carter, who had to divest himself from his peanut farm, compared to the president, who has vast holdings in real estate and hotels that are advertised constantly on national television, and they charge foreign people, you know, guests and who buy the rooms in order to, apparently, to get some sort of favor in the administration. That's a pretty clear indictment of somebody violating the emoluments clause. So, you know, they have abuse of power and contempt of or obstruction of Congress. And so it's so obvious. Any first-year law student who's taken con law can tell you that this is an impeachable offense.
What latitude do you have in your job at the Bee for your take on what's happening, your politics? And you are in a very democratic city and a democratic state. What do you hear back if you take a different position that isn't represented more by liberals or Democrats?
Well, I'm completely free to say what I want when I want it, number one. I've never been censored at the Bee. I consider myself rather ecumenical and probably more moderate in some ways than people would think. I'm a gun owner. I grew up in Minnesota. I have a pickup truck. You know, I'm not like living in some penthouse someplace. And I grew up rather middle class. My father was a war hero who won the Bronze Star. And I have uncles who were at D-Day. And, you know, it's not like we're all one thing. And so my wife is a former pastor. I consider myself kind of mainstreamy moderate in a way. And so, sure, I hear back from people all the time who don't know anything about me, and they take this snapshot of what I've done. I'll give you a really good example of this about impeachment. Oh, you never criticized Bill Clinton like this. And so I went back to my Oregonian stuff, from which I'm afraid to say is 20 years ago, and I wrote an article about it and posted a gallery of cartoons about Bill Clinton and impeachment and Monica Lewinsky. I consider myself rather ecumenical on this sort of thing. I my views are my views, but I'm registered NPP, and, you know, I try to call it as I see it, but I'm allowed to have my own political opinions. I'm a political cartoonist.
The new job I referenced is that you are now deputy opinion editor at the Sacramento Bee, which also prompted a self-portrait, a bright-eyed, toothy-grinned, bushy-haired guy with one hand pointing at his drawing board and the other hand on the computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. My title only reflects what I've already been doing around there for years, which is I've written hundreds of editorials that nobody knows. I've written editorials on everything from rodenticide to I wrote the lead impeachment editorial a couple of weeks ago. And I've been acting editorial page editor a couple of times. And when Dan Moraine left and then Gil Duran went out for a couple of weeks. And so I just feel that this is what I've really been doing.
You're listening to Sacramento Bee political cartoonist and the deputy opinion editor, Jack Ullman. Couple quick questions. How many cartoons do you draw in a year?
About 300.
Your byline is Ullman, the Sacramento Bee, and the Washington Post Writers Group.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
My cartoons are syndicated by the Washington Post.
Okay. Mm-hmm. 8 years at the Sacramento Bee.
Seven.
Downsizing.
Mm-hmm.
Transitioning to a more digital product, trends that are happening in newspapers across the country. But what's the inside debate been about your ongoing role at the Bee, and how has it been to see this happen around you?
I don't know that there's been any ongoing debate about my role at the Bee. When I started at the Oregonian, there were 340 people there. Now there are 50. When I started at the Sacramento Bee, there were about 125 people there, and now there are, I believe, 65 on the news side. We have 28 reporters. So, and this is the story with every medium-sized daily newspaper in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just McClatchy. It's not just Gannett. It's everybody. It's kind of like there's the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, which are very well-funded, and then there's everybody else slugging it out. And so I think since I've come down here, we've been holding the quality as well as we can. I'm very proud of where I work. You should see how hard people work there. And they're very committed. They're very fair people. They come in early and they stay late, and they care about not just the newspaper, but the community. And it's actually moving, like emotionally moving, to see how committed people are to their jobs down there. They believe in what they're doing. They believe in the First Amendment. They believe in freedom of information. And they believe in getting it out to people in South Placer and Elk Grove and Davis and where our circulation is. And we go out, and we go out in the community, and we talk to folks, and we meet them, and we enjoy seeing them.
We have posted a number of your panels. Thank you for sharing them with us.
Sure.
On our website.
It's $1 million a cartoon. I have to try to be a little funny here.
Okay? Wow, we got a great gift then. Tell me what you're working on. What's the next one that we'll see?
Well, I haven't drawn it yet, but I really want to do National Pompeo Radio with nothing considered. So
taking the controversy with Mary Louise Kelly's interview head on.
Right. So I'll probably do that tomorrow. First, I'm going to be conducting the District 6 City Council endorsement meeting in about 42 minutes. So I have an action-packed day. And then tonight I'm doing a Bee Book Club with Paul Kitagaki Jr., who's done a wonderful new book about internment camps in the United States for Japanese.
You know, what I just did is such an interesting lesson in framing. I don't want to say that it's the controversy about Mary Louise Kelly's interview. I want to say it's the controversy about Mike Pompeo's response to it, what he did afterward, what has ensued. And isn't that an example of the choices you make in what you choose to draw and highlight and how you draw it?
Sure. I mean, the trouble with this news environment, and I'm sure that you experience it here and everybody in journalism experiences it, is the torrent of information that comes flying at you every day. Before Trump was president, you know, there would be one or two obvious stories throughout the day. There's like a tweet every 4 seconds with this guy, and you're like, I don't know what to react to. What do I pull out of the pile that makes this, that everybody knows about? There's so much happening. And I can't tell you, I barely drew James Mattis. I mean, there are people that just went right by me in a way because there were so many other things happening.
I think that's so true. I don't think there's any way to articulate how fast the churn and the river has become in keeping up with all that's in this administration and in this world, for that matter. Look at everything that's happening this week.
So. It's overwhelming. And I don't know how much time we have, but I actually was a young teenager during Watergate. There was no Twitter during Watergate. There was no cable television news during Watergate. It was Walter Cronkite and David Brinkley and Chet Huntley and Peter Jennings. And, you know, it was a very fixed media environment. And now there's 1,000 outlets and 1 trillion tweets and, you know, Facebook postings and whatever. And it's just it's like the haystack is now come all needles, you know, is I don't know which one. I don't know. There's so many. What do
there's
I do?
There's a cartoon.
Yeah, right. There's a bad metaphor cartoon and I can label them all, you know, the economy.
I have always enjoyed these conversations because of all of your knowledge about what's happened then and all of the places you take us to now. So we have to do this more often, especially
I'm in
the year ahead, Jack.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you. And congratulations.
Great to see you.
On the new job. You
Thanks.
Too. Jack Oman, a 2016 Pulitzer Prize winner and the new deputy opinion editor for the Sacramento Bee. You can see his panels. It's worth spending some time at capradio.org/insight. NPR's special coverage of the impeachment trial of the president begins in just a little bit after our show ends. Up next, from a journalism degree at Boston University to founding the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism at Arizona State University, my guest has had quite a journey in journalism, and he's now going to be UOP's next president. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.